next case of the day, which is State versus Abago. Justice Frydenberg will be joining the court. Counsel, give me a second here while I get the proper sign-in sheet. So, is it Mr. Taylor?
Yes, Your Honor.
Good morning to you and Mr. Rao. Good morning to you. Do either counsel have any questions before we begin?
I don't have any questions, Your Honor, but I would just let the court know that I suffer from allergies, so I do have a cough suppressant in my mouth.
Okay. Thank you very much. With that, Mr. Taylor, you may approach and you may proceed.
May it please the court, Your Honors. My name is Corey Taylor again, and I am counsel for the appellant Coma Abligo. We would ask this court to overrule the lower court's ruling in a number of areas, given the abuse of discretion that Mr. Abligo has pointed out in his briefs. I will point on three areas of the five specifically, but overall, I would ask this court again to overrule based on the abuse of discretion, because individually, there's an abuse of discretion that's more than harmless error, but collectively between all of the issues, it definitely goes beyond harmless error and shows the abuse. The first area that I'd like the court to look at has to do with the rape shield law. In this case, Mr. Abligo made a filing about a week before court in reference to some videos that he wanted to use that were Snapchat videos that showed the named victim in the case and some conduct that she had done around that time when the incident came in. So on March 6th, the incident was alleged to have occurred in this case, and the named victim, Akan, reported this 5 days later to authorities on March 11th. Authorities interviewed my client on March 16th, and the record reflects that my client showed that there were some videos that he showed to Detective McGill in that fashion. Ultimately, when we got to trial later in 2021, client sought to admit these videos and provided a notice if the court was going to find that these videos were under the rape shield law to say that these videos should be allowed. If they're not rape shield law, which the court in this case actually ruled that they were not part of the rape shield law and did not show the sexual predisposition or the sexual conduct, then the item should have been admitted from that standpoint because they were relevant evidence. There's a low threshold for whether their evidence is relevant or not, and it should have been admissible, and it was probable to the case at hand in this case.
Did the court not receive the evidence because it found it irrelevant or because it was more under 403, more prejudicial than
that? Well, the court ruled that originally that the 15-day notice wasn't done in this case, but the court found that it was not under the rape shield statute, so they said it was not relevant. The court made that ruling from that standpoint. There was an offer of proof that was done. When we were in court, we provided information from Bills, who was one of the witnesses, who authenticated the videos and talked about the videos having flirtatious behavior of Ms. Akan, and then those videos talked to her conduct and also talked to her relationship that would go direct to the potential for consent, which would go to my client's defense, as well as to credibility in order to cross-examine her effectively. So by the court not allowing these videos to come in, my client's hands were conceptually tied behind his back because he was not able to talk about conduct that she did at that point in time that would go to consent. And when you look at the factual basis here in the particular case itself, the action that is alleged was that she turned over on her back of her own volition. There was not any threat of force or anything of that nature. And so my client's state of mind and what he thought would be consent would come into play. And that should have been something that should have went to the jury. And in this particular case, it was not because the court found that it was not relevant.
Can you help me how we get from the video? The video was like flirtatious dancing. Is that what the...
Yes, the video...
Tell me how that becomes an instance of sexual behavior as under described in the statute.
Well, it becomes, if it's sexual behavior, it would be behavior that that individual con had done to other people or to my client. So past sexual behavior cannot be used against her. But this was current behavior that was going on, and it was flirtatious in that avenue. So it really goes to her credibility.
So how should we define sexual behavior? You've seen the video, I take it.
Mm, yeah, I have, Judge.
What was sexual behavior about those Snapchat videos?
Well, there was some flirtatious dancing that was in the videos. She was also dressed in lingerie and night clothing within the videos, and she was, you know, having eye contact and dancing suggestively for my client. At one point in time, she turned her back to the camera and put her rear end in the air from that standpoint. So if it was sexual behavior, then it would go under the rape seal statute. But the court found that it wasn't sexual behavior and said they just don't think it's relevant. So
what is your position? Is it your position that it is sexual behavior or not?
Well, we put it in abundance of caution that it was some behavior because of what she was doing suggestively. But if you look at State v. LaValliere, when you talk about consent and you talk about credibility, those are things that LaValliere and this court found that did not necessarily go under predisposition or sexual behavior. It had to do whether the evidence was admissible. So either way, if it's sexual behavior, it still fits under the rape seal statute because it goes to my client's position and his ability to defend himself. But if it's not sexual behavior because it was not sex, we weren't talking about prior sex conduct with any individuals, we weren't talking about specific sexual intimate acts like where you have intercourse from that standpoint. If it's not sexual behavior, then it should have gotten in under the regular rules of evidence under 401 and 403 because it was relevant and probative.
Help me a little bit. I haven't. I have not seen the videos. I'll tell you right off the bat.
Okay.
But what I'm hearing you say is the videos depict the victim, but not your client. Is that right to begin with?
Yes. The videos depict the victim. My client is the one that is taking the video. So she's doing all of these things to my client, and he's taking this on a cell phone. So these are Snapchat videos that he put on his cell phone and put on Snapchat when these parties were all together. And so that included the victim, my client, Mr. Capers, and as well as Ms. Bills, who testified later and authenticated the videos themselves.
Okay. So if you imagine the famous lingerie company that has put on the show every year on television.
Victoria's Secret?
Yes. I wasn't going to use the name. Does every camera person at one of those events have that sort of relationship with the people who are modeling?
Well, that's different because it's not a personal relationship that's coming in. They're doing that from a business standpoint and they're broadcasting that. This was not a broadcast that was being done where it was some sort of modeling or marketing.
So
this
where I'm leading to with all of these questions is how does this evidence make it any more or less likely that the events occurred that are the subject of the prosecution?
Because on the night that the event occurred on March 6th, the parties were together drinking, the same four parties that were in this video. The behavior that she had done in the video and the nights before that were done on that night. So my client had that state of mind as to her consent because she was suggestively telling him, you know, as to his consent and his permission.
So your argument is if she's flirtatious in the past, that equates to consent on the night of the incident?
No, it goes to her credibility. It could be part of the consent, but it goes to her credibility. That would be something for the jury to decide. So because it's not sexual behavior itself, and we're not talking about her character evidence for predisposition or sexual disposition, it should have come in.
Isn't there a danger that this could be more prejudicial than probative because the jurors might take it as this person is flirtatious, she must have consented, and wouldn't that be a reason that might be kept out?
And we've got to protect the rights of the defendant in this case. So in the State v. LaValliere case, it was a danger that talking about this LaValliere, about the victim there having a relationship with another party could have come up, but it was still error to not allow it because a danger does not mean that it should not come in. That would be something for the state to argue from that standpoint. And by holding it out, it has effectively taken my client's ability to defend himself from that standpoint. I'll briefly touch on some of the other areas because I did want to have some time for rebuttal if possible. For the same nurse that was done, the same nurse was reported 5 days after this case had happened. So a forensic examination was never done. However, statements were brought in, as you see in the brief, from the named victim in this case. And we believe that those statements should not have been allowed, given that it was not part of a forensic exam.
Basically redundant?
They were redundant, but they were corroborative in nature. So by doing that...
Your client admits to having sexual relations, just says it's consensual. So what's the import of the sane nurse's testimony?
Because it doesn't pull in the fact that what she was doing on the videos, it doesn't pull in her credibility as to the drinking and that she said my client and her did not have this type of relationship. All it has is a nurse getting her side of the story without having the context. So it's another avenue, another area where her information has been corroborated. And in relation to the motion to continue, the state did not provide information for the names and addresses of Akon or of Bills, and we asked to continue it, provided an affidavit from that standpoint, and the court overruled that, allowing us to depo Ms. Bills in the day beforehand when my client had already waived his speedy trial. The state did not provide the information for us to get that information, which had to do with the authentication of the videos, and it was an abuse of discretion for the court to not allow that motion to continue. And then as far as sentencing as to my client, you can see that he was a veteran that was honorably discharged. The court's sentencing of him of 4 to 10 years was beyond what should have been done in this case because he was amenable to probation, Your Honor. So because of all of that in the briefs, I see my time is run. I would ask this court to find this abuse of discretion was more than harmless error and remand it back to the court if possible. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Ralph, good morning to you.
Good morning.
May it please the court, my name is Austin Ralph. I represent the state of Nebraska on appeal of LEGO. Primarily takes issue with several of the district court's evidentiary rulings, as well as the district court's denial of his pretrial motion to continue and the sentence imposed. As explained in my brief, and as I will detail here shortly, we see no reversible error here. We therefore ask this court to affirm the judgment below. I'll start with the Snapchat videos. The district court laid them out, you know, described them in its order. This court is able to review them as well. They're, you know, 5-10 seconds long. She's dancing around, she's fully clothed, she's just messing around. It's not sexual behavior, it's not relevant to consent.
Do you agree that this rape shield shouldn't apply to these videos to begin with?
Yeah, I think so, because 4.1.12, let me grab the exact language here, applies, let's see, the following evidence is not admissible, and it talks about evidence offered to prove that any victim engaged in other sexual behavior. I don't think that's the case here. Or evidence offered to prove any victim's sexual predisposition. And based on this court's, description of those two categories of evidence in La Velour and the statutory language, I did not think 412 applied. So it would basically just go into relevance and 403. As I said, I don't see how these videos are relevant when it's just short videos of her sort of dancing, fully clothed, and we don't even know the time exactly when these were taken. There was no specific date other than it was not the date of the incident. It was up to possibly 2 or 3 weeks prior, based on the record. So I don't know how that could be relevant to consent on the night of the incident. Dancing around has nothing to do with whether she consented to have sex on March 6th. So,
working from a hypothetical, let's say these videos happened immediately before the incident. Would the analysis change?
Not really, no, because it's still, again, it's innocent behavior. It's just her having fun at a party, basically, dancing around. It's not anywhere close to the equivalent of consent to sex.
I think there was an argument this morning that this has to do with the credibility of the witness. What is your response to that?
So in their brief and kind of at trial, they had a couple arguments about credibility, talking about the basically none of them are supported by the record and or they are collateral, and so they shouldn't be admitted. One point was that she had testified in her deposition that she was uncomfortable with obligo, but she never testified to that at trial, so there's nothing to impeach. The other was about the, a possible motive to lie to protect her relationship with Capers, which I just don't see logically how that could be when Capers is actually in the videos. And again, they're completely innocent. So I don't know how there could be any motive to lie based on that. And then the third thing that they wanted to impeach her about was whether she was new to drinking and the amount that she had been drinking and things of that nature, completely collateral. This court has explained multiple times that if it's collateral to the primary issue, which here is the issue of consent, it's not permitted to be, it's impermissible impeachment. And so the three things that they said they wanted to impeach her on are either not in the record to be impeached or would be inappropriate under this court's case law. So that would be my answer, that the claimed impeachment value is non-existent. Again, the relevance, I don't think there is any. The 403, multiple reasons that could be excluded. Justice Papik talked about one. Another would be simply that, the probative value is simply not there, that the issue is strictly consent, and this distracts the jury from that issue. And so, particularly with the standard of review here, abuse of discretion, we see no abuse of discretion in the district court's rendering or determining these exhibits to be inadmissible. Moving to the motion to continue, again, abuse of discretion standard of review, the district court's reasons given were perfectly acceptable. It was the eve of trial. It was Friday, about 4 p.m. Trial was scheduled to start Monday. The reasons were basically, the primary reason, I think, if you read the record, is that the late disclosure of these statements that the defendant made to Bills, obviously it wouldn't have surprised the defendant since they're his statements. Bills had been, you know, listed as a witness since the beginning.
Well, that's not actually fair, is it? If he claims he never made the statements. And the fact that he said that
he, I don't think he ever claimed he didn't make the statements, Your Honor.
He did testify in this case, correct?
No, but he did do an interview with the police, and during that interview, my recollection is that he basically, one of his justifications was, you know, I wasn't in my right mind. I explained this all to Bills that I wouldn't, you know, have sex with her, et cetera. So I think he more or less admitted to
more or
these
less the same statements that she said.
Yeah, and the victim as well testified to basically him saying, oh, I wasn't in my right mind. You know, you're making a big deal out of this after, she kicked him out of the bed. So he would have been aware, I think, in his explanations to the law enforcement and to the victim itself indicated that he was aware he made these statements. So I don't think that would have been surprising to him. And then additionally, you know, the case had been continued. I think seven different trial dates had been set. So all of these reasons were perfectly justified for the district court, no abuse of discretion. And that's on that issue. As far as the text messages and the testimony of the sexual assault nurse examiner, unless this court has questions, I would submit that on my brief. And then I would also note on the excessive sentence, it was 4 to 10 years on class 2, very much on the low end, and don't see how that could be an abuse of discretion here either. Unless this court has questions, we'd ask that you affirm the judgment below. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal?
No, Your Honor.
There is no time for rebuttal, so that concludes arguments in State versus Obligo. Counsel, you are excused.